We're exploring the silent conversations we have in our heads, which powerfully influence how we live our lives. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Glad to have you along. The chatter in our heads can compromise our decision-making, our performance. It can hurt our relationships and our health. And that voice, it is a fast talker. Psychologist Ethan Cross cites a study that we internally talk to ourselves at a rate equivalent to speaking 4,000 words per minute out loud. What have you wondered about preventing negative thought spirals or quieting that self-critic that talks too much? 800-642-1234. Ethan Cross is a professor of psychology and management and organizations at the University of Michigan, where he directs the Emotion and Self-Control Lab. He wrote the book called Chatter, The Voice in Our Head, Why It Matters, and How to Harness It. Ethan, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me, Kate. Great to be here this morning.
Well, you call that inner voice a Swiss Army knife of the mind, and I'm having flashbacks to MacGyver here, prepared for anything to solve a problem. Can you introduce us to this inner voice and what mental gymnastics it's capable of?
Well, first of all, it warms my heart so much that you reference MacGyver and actually know what a Swiss Army knife is. Nowadays, I don't always know whether that reference is apt, but I'm happy to. So here's what I mean when I use the term inner voice, and here's the way scientists often use this term. We're using this idea to refer to our ability to silently use language to reflect on our experiences in the world, and it turns out this capacity to be able to silently use words in your mind, this helps us do lots of different things. At the most basic end of the spectrum, your inner voice helps you keep information active in your head for short periods of time. So you go to the grocery store, and if you're like me, 5 minutes into the expedition, you forget what your partner has told you to buy. And so I'll think to myself, what did my wife tell me to get? And then I'll go down the list and I'll rehearse the list. Cheese, eggs, yogurt. That's me using my inner voice as part of my working memory system. This working memory system, we all have one, and it's what allows us to keep information active in our heads for very short periods of time. Your inner voice is part of that system. Your inner voice also helps you simulate and plan. So before I have a big presentation, I'll go for a walk around my neighborhood, and I'll actually go over in my head what I'm going to say during that presentation. Mm-hmm. I'll often do that word for word. I'll get to the end, and then I'll imagine hearing what the most obnoxious audience member is going to ask me, the question, and then I'll reply to them. So that's me using my inner voice to simulate and plan. Many people report using it for that purpose as well, before interviews or dates. We use our inner voice to control ourselves. When I'm exercising, I like the outcomes, the consequences of exercising, but I hate doing it. I'll be talking to myself throughout the whole process. Come on. 10 more reps, 10, 9, 8, you could do it.
It's only 45 seconds of your life, Ethan.
That's right. That's right.
I swear I've heard that before.
It doesn't feel like 45 seconds. and then finally, and then I'll throw it back to you. But and this fourth function of the inner voice is, in some ways, it's the most magical in my mind. Not magical in a supernatural sense, but more in an awe-inspiring sense. We use our inner voice to make sense of our experiences navigating this crazy world. And the way we use our inner voice to make sense of those experiences really shapes our understanding of who we are. And so what I mean by that is stuff happens. You get rejected. Some people get sick, so forth and so on. When we experience those curveballs of life, we often turn our attention inward to come up with a story to explain what we're going through. Well, you know, I said this, they said that. And those stories are really pivotal to our identity. And your inner voice is involved in that. So from keeping information active in your head, to planning, to controlling yourself, to making meaning out of your life, your inner voice helps you do all of those things, which is why I think it's such an incredible tool. And it's also why when people ask me, hey, this inner voice is driving me crazy, how can I get rid of it? My answer is, you don't want to get rid of your inner voice. You want to figure out how you can harness it.
Ethan Cross with us, professor in the University of Michigan Psychology Department. His book is called Chatter, and you can join in on the chatter that you hear. Does the chatter inside your head hold you back from completing things or getting started on new projects? Are you able to separate yourself from the initial negative thoughts you have about yourself and focus on a positive situation? How do you use that inner dialogue? 800-642-1234. Something that's really curious is that this inner dialogue is very self-focused. It's very me-oriented. And it got me wondering, are we really that self-absorbed as humans?
Yes. So here's what I mean by that. So, we often, I think in many ways, in an ideal context, we would be just navigating the world, just focused on whatever is to come. But sometimes things happen that draw our attention, right? And often those things that happen that draw our attention are things that are self-relevant, like, because fundamentally we do care about surviving and thriving in this world. And a lot of the times, if you think of this inner voice as a tool of the mind, a lot of the time that it becomes activated is when something about you is at stake. And so I think that's in part why we see this finding that a lot of our self-referential verbal thoughts tend to deal with ourselves. It's because we're trying to work through problems that are relevant to us. And I don't think that's a bad thing per se. I think it's a feature of the human condition.
I wonder if you could just contrast this, because you tell the story of Jilbolt Taylor, who had a stroke and lost that inner voice and was really able to kind of feel that before and after effect. Can you explain a little bit about what she went through at a youngish age, I might add too, of having the stroke?
Yeah, happy to. So before I launch into her story, let me tell you about the other side of the inner voice, the dark side, which is what I call chatter. And it's relevant to explaining her experience. So I just described this inner voice that we all have that is a real asset. And yet, as many listeners no doubt have experienced, there are times when we try to engage this inner voice, but it doesn't help us. Instead, it harms us. And this is a phenomenon that I call chatter. And the experience here is something has happened in the world. You're trying to make sense of it. And you're trying to use words to try to sort through this problem, but you don't come up with clear solutions. Instead, you start spinning. You start worrying and ruminating and catastrophizing. It's those negative thought loops that I call chatter. And they're a huge problem. As you mentioned before, chatter makes it hard for us to think and perform. It can create friction in our relationships with others and damage our health. Now, Jilbolt Taylor was a Harvard neuroanatomist working at the very top of her game who, like many of us, experienced chatter at times. And guess what? She didn't like it. Most people don't like chatter because it is so aversive and is so harmful. And so she would often wonder to herself, hey, what would it be like if I just got rid of this goddamn chatter, right? Like, get rid of the inner critic. And sadly, she got her wish one day while she was exercising in the morning on a treadmill. She suffered a stroke. And the stroke was located in the left portion of her brain. That's where a blood vessel popped. Right around parts of the brain that are central to our ability to produce language. So she temporarily lost her ability not only to communicate with other people using words, but she also lost her ability to communicate with herself using words. And I always like to ask people to just imagine what that might be like, because I have trouble even contemplating what would it be like. Yeah. Like to not be able to use words to refer to myself, to not be able to count down the reps during exercise or try to make sense of something. It's a disturbing experience to even try to imagine. Here's what's fascinating about Jill's experience. She's just had a major stroke. She can't talk to other people. And yet she initially describes this experience as euphoric. She's blissfully happy. She describes herself as going to La La Land. Mm. And the reason for this, she goes on to describe, is because when the words escaped her, so did her chatter, right? So she can't talk to other people or herself, but that also means she's not worrying and ruminating and catastrophizing like she used to. And not experiencing that harmful chatter for her is momentarily liberating. Mm. Now, as the hours and days and weeks went on, she did go on to describe this experience as disturbing, because although the chatter was gone, so were all of the other things her inner voice allowed her to do, like keep information active in her head, plan, simulate, control herself, and so forth and so on. And at the end, you know, she comes around to basically agreeing that the real challenge isn't to rid oneself of an inner voice, it is to harness it, which is very much the theme of my book in this work.
And we're gonna get into the tools in just a moment with University of Michigan psychologist Ethan Cross. Studies our inner dialogue and all the things it does for us. Is your self-talk negative, or do you have ways of encouraging yourself? What rituals work for you to calm your mind and stop that ruminating? How much of your confidence hinges on what you tell yourself? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Ethan Cross here on the Ideas Network. We all have a voice in our head. We're letting it out on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. I will let you into my chatter. I allow myself to ruminate about everything I did poorly on the show or how interviews came up short, and I allow that chatter to flow freely as I bike home after work. Seriously, I think about all the negatives, the obvious follow-up questions that never came to me, the phrasing I botched, the choice word or statistic that wasn't at my ready, and I fix it. I fix it all in my head, and when I get home, I tell myself to stop, just stop, and it usually works. And then when I get back on my bike in the morning, I'm a time traveler. I visualize how an interview will unfold on the air, what the guest might say, how I'll respond. I do visualizing so I can really feel more confident in a stressful situation. Do you do visualizing techniques? How does it help you? 800-642-1234. University of Michigan psychology professor Ethan Cross studies self-control, and he's with us for the hour. Ethan, your words and chatter really resonated with me, and this whole ability to be a time traveler in our minds. Can you elaborate on that?
Yes, happy to. And I want to thank you, Kate, for just admitting that you tend to ruminate at times. I think most of us do, but in my experience, people find it really affirming to know that other people experience chatter at times as well, that other, you know, perfectly successful, happy people like yourself. So I think you've just done a great deed for your listeners.
Appreciate it.
So let's talk about time traveling in our mind. I've got a bone to pick. Is that the right expression? about this issue, because here's the thing. We often hear nowadays that we should strive to always be in the moment. Sound familiar?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So this is not something I'm making up. And, I have nothing against being in the moment at times. Being at the moment, in the moment, can be wonderful and is appropriate when we're doing certain things. But we human beings evolved to be able to travel in time in our minds. And that capacity is a remarkable asset that we possess. My ability to travel in time in my mind lets me plan for the future, just like you were visualizing how things are going to go, you know, during an interview later
with
on
you.
That day. With me. Hopefully we're living up to the expectations, right? But that's remarkable. Like, your ability to simulate how this is going to go. And what if Cross says this? What if he doesn't talk at all? That could be not good for a live interview, right? You then have backup plans for how to respond that you wouldn't have if you didn't think about the future. Let's talk about going into the past. You go home, right? You know, ideally you don't want to ruminate about the past interviews, but doing a post-mortem to think, hey, what went well? What didn't go well? That's essential to getting better, to the ability to learn from our mistakes. I do this all the time after every presentation I give. I make notes to myself, actually, on the PowerPoint slides. This really went well. Consider changing this stuff. I also travel in time in my mind to bring myself joy and delight, right? I literally, during the commercial break, I'm going to admit something.
Okay.
I was fantasizing about the vacation I'm going to take this August with my family. I was thinking about where we're going to stay, what we're going to do. Sometimes I'll go back into the past. I'll experience nostalgia. I'll relive, positive experiences. That is all about traveling in time in our mind. We don't want to prevent ourselves from traveling in time. We want to embrace it. What we want to stop, though, is getting stuck when we travel in time. And that is often what happens when we experience chatter. It's like this mental time travel machine gets stuck in the past when we're harping on something negative. Or if we're worried about the future, that's us stuck in the future. Now, one solution when that happens is to refocus on the present. And that can be quite helpful for some people in certain situations. But one of the points I try to make in my book is that there are countless additional tools that we possess to get unstuck, tools that allow us to travel in time in our minds more effectively. And I think we'd all be better off if we knew what those tools were.
Let me just reintroduce you for a moment. Ethan Cross, professor in the University of Michigan Psychology Department. His book is called Chatter. You can join in 800-642-1234. Tony is joining us from Sturgeon Bay. Hi, Tony. What would you like to add?
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have a daytime-nighttime chatter. My daytime chatter is I'm a troubleshooter. I'm a problem solver. I'm always trying to figure out the solution. And my nighttime chatter, the dream state chatter, and this is a real repetitive theme in dream, is that I'm always trying to get back to where I was in a destination setting. So I'm at point A and I got to get back to point B in the dream state. And is there any suggestions? And it's not that it's a problem. It's just very interesting that I continually troubleshoot by day and by night.
Oh, wow. Tony, thank you. The dream state and the inner voice. Ethan.
Yeah, thanks for that question, Tony. Well, let's start with the dreams. You know, dreams are fascinating and they remain a mystery to science. I reviewed that literature when I was researching my book and had a lot of fun doing it. And one of the sets of findings I came across that I think is relevant to your case is many scientists think that part of what happens when we dream is we're engaging in a threat simulation process. What I mean by that is we're essentially trying to anticipate negative things that might happen in the future, and we're starting to do that cognitive work to come up with solutions to prepare ourselves for those potentially threatening situations. That may well be why you have this recurring dream of, you know, you're trying to get from point A to B. That's a problem you're trying to solve. That's one idea that the research might suggest.
I like how you called the dreams slightly zany flight simulators, I think it was.
Yes. You paid attention. I love it. Look, the dreams we have, right? They're quite the threat simulation machine, because they don't always respect principles of physics or so forth. But I find that particularly interesting, that idea that some of what is happening in our dreams is not just totally random. It is tethered to our experiences in this world. And you know, it's preparing ourselves. Now, to be clear, this is a theory. It's an idea. It has some evidence behind it, but there's a lot more we need. But that's the best account I can give you to explain your experience based on where the science is right now.
Let's go to Marcus in Milwaukee. Hi, Marcus. Go ahead.
Hi. So I feel like it goes back to what the DJ said on the first hour of your program today, that when she makes a mistake, you know, she just keeps going, because people only know what we tell them. And so if we make mistakes, they don't know. And so it's our own self voice that stops us from doing things and stops us from trying. And so I feel that, you know, yesterday is gone to a certain extent. Tomorrow's not promised. So today's a gift. That's why it's called the present. But yet I still will take and reflect on things that have occurred in order to kind of clarify in my own mind so that I can move forward. And I use it for improvement as opposed to just negative self-talk, which is just going to destroy me.
Marcus, thank you for that. Ethan.
Marcus, you sound like a very well-adjusted individual who is using his inner voice very well. So, I think bravo. And one thing I would add, I guess, is there may be some negativity that you experience when you think about negative past, you know, things that happened yesterday and how can I improve? There may be some negative emotion that arises when that happens. There's a difference between experiencing short blips of negativity and chatter. Chatter is when you get stuck in that negative thought loop where you keep those negative feelings alive over time. That's harmful. But we don't want to actually rid ourselves of the ability to experience negativity. A little bit of anxiety when we think about something important coming up, that's a good thing. Research shows that it helps you prepare. A little bit of sadness or regret or anger in response to different experiences we have in this world, those are all functional responses that are preparing us to handle our circumstances well. So if folks experience negativity at times, I'd like to remind them that that's not bad. You don't want to not be able to experience negative emotions.
University of Michigan psychology professor Ethan Cross runs all kinds of experiments on our inner voice. We'll pick this up with Ethan after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. The chatter in our head can pollute our thoughts and fill us with painful emotions. We're learning about the inner voice on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. What do you think the inner chatter is like for a fallen Olympian, like champion alpine skier American Michaela Schifrin, when she slid into that fall, when she missed a gate? The NBC commentator was baffled, said she was one of the most consistent and mistake-free skiers ever. After giant slalom, Michaela blamed herself for a small mistiming and apologized for her DNF, her did not finish. How do you recover from uncontrolled mind chatter when you blow it? What does your self-critic say when you make a mistake? How do you shush it and soldier on? 800-642-1234. University of Michigan psychology professor Ethan Cross directs the Emotion and Self-Control Lab, and he's with us for the hour. So, Ethan, you say the key to avoid rumination is to combine the two Starship Enterprise crew members, Captain Kirk and Officer Spock. Explain why this dynamic duo.
So there are three categories of tools that exist for managing chatter. Things you could do on your own, other people, and then, you know, there are these environmental tools. And if we turn to the category of, well, how do you actually get help with your chatter from other people? That's where Kirk and Spock really come into play. Lots of people think that the way to feel better about something that you're ruminating about is to find someone to just vent your emotions to. This idea is an ancient one. It goes back to Aristotle. Freud popularized it more recently. There's been a lot of work on venting. And what we know is that if all you do is vent about your chatter to someone else, say, hey, Kate, you're not going to believe what happened on this NPR interview. This host kept on talking. They just wouldn't shut, you know. That two things happen there. Number one, it feels good to know that there's someone else who's there for me, who's willing to take the time to listen and hear me out. So venting can actually strengthen the friendship and relational bonds between two people. But if all you do is vent, that doesn't do anything to help the person who's struggling reframe their chatter, right? It doesn't help them broaden their perspective in a way that ultimately lets them work through it. The best kinds of conversations for managing chatter are conversations that do two things. First, you do want to take that time to connect with someone, to share what you're going through. It is important for them to learn about your experience. That's the Kirk part of the conversation. Captain Kirk is all about emotion and heart. But at a certain point in that conversation, the person you're talking to ideally starts nudging you to look at that bigger picture. They go into Spock mode. So Kate, how do you think you might have managed that situation better? Or, you know, I've been in this circumstance too, and here's how I've dealt with it. So that is the formula for getting good chatter support. And I think the take home here for listeners is really twofold. First, when you're thinking about who you should talk to about your chatter. And a lot of us, I should add, like when we experience chatter, we're often highly motivated to share what we're going through with other people.
That's human nature.
That's human nature. Like a couple of caveats to that, we tend to not want to talk about shame or experiences of certain kinds of trauma. But for most of the other chatter-provoking experiences, we just want to find someone to talk to. So when you have that impulse, think really carefully about who in your network is skilled at not just listening and not just getting you to share what you went through, but also people who are skilled at helping you think through things and reframe what you're experiencing. There are many people in my life who I'm super close to. I love them dearly. I'm related to them. I never call them about my chatter. I call them to talk about the kids and other things, but I never call them about the chatter because I know all they're going to do is, in their attempts to help me, just get me to vent and co-ruminate with them about what's going on. I've got three or four people who I know I could count on to be my chatter advisors, and I avail myself of that resource. So that's one take home. The other take home is, if someone comes to you for support, be mindful of how these principles work. Take some time to listen and hear them out. But when you see your opening, try to help them focus on that bigger picture.
But how can you be subtle about it? I mean, maybe you don't want Spock's, like, here's the formula, here's what you need to do. And that's not really a good framing of it. But, you know, maybe they don't want the answers at that moment or want that level-headedness that Spock brings to it.
You're absolutely right. And so, you know, in my book, I talk about the art component, the art form to being a good chatter advisor to others. And it's a critical piece of the equation. And the reason for that is, although these two principles, Kirk and Spock, listening and advising, if you will, are relevant and helpful, when you transition from one mode, listening, to the other, advising, that's going to depend on the person you're talking to and the situation they're grappling with. And you want to be sensitive to that and try to see it, feel out when to transition. So let me give you a concrete example. My wife will sometimes come to me with some chatter she's experiencing and want to talk about it. And I always start by empathically listening to her and really, oh, it sounds terrible, and getting more information. And then at a certain point, I'll ask her, hey, totally get it. It sounds awful. I have an idea. Can I share it with you? And sometimes she'll pause and then say, no, just keep listening. I'm not done. And she's not ready yet to transition to, like, trying to work through this together. So I'll keep listening and then I'll try again a little later. At other conversations we have, like, I'll pose the same question to her. Hey, I totally get it. Sounds awful. Can I offer you, like, my thoughts on this? And she'll be like, please tell me what you think. That's why I'm coming to you for support. So you want to treat this as not a firm, hey, you listen for 30 seconds and then you transition to advising. I wish I could give people that prescription, but I can't, because that's not what the research suggests. Instead, the idea is that you want to be mindful of these two general principles and use them as a type of compass to steer you in these conversations you're having with folks, but to be a little bit flexible as to when you switch from one mode to the other.
And speaking of modes as well, social media, many people just take to social media to air either these grievances and kind of bring it out into the open. What effect does that have?
Well, social media is a double-edged sword. You know, I find it fascinating because since we've been roaming the world with an inner voice, it's largely been stuck in our head. The books, the printing press changed that to some degree, but social media has really transformed what's going on. If you log into Facebook, at least the last time I checked, the prompt that you often get is to say, what is on your mind?
Mm-hmm.
We're being beckoned to just air out our inner voice. That you could think of social media in some ways as a type of megaphone for our inner voice. And what we know is that social media can be both helpful or harmful to us and to society. On the one hand, social media makes it really easy for us to broadcast our emotions unfiltered right when they are peaking. And that can have some negative consequences for other folks, right? Because when you talk to other people about what's happening in your head in the physical offline world, you're getting information back when you're talking face-to-face to someone. There's all these empathy cues that you are exposed to.
So facial Kaden, you cues. And I, right.
Facial cues.
Like,
exactly.
I wish I could see you right now, but I can't. And so there are impediments to that.
Exactly. And even though you can't see me, the fact that I can hear your voice and your vocal tone, mm-hmm. and I know when you're chiming in and when you're not, that's all giving me information to constrain how I communicate with you further, right? Now, social media strips all of that away because we're just typing into a search prompt. And what that does is it makes it much easier for us to, you know, for a lack of a better term, in some cases, act ugly with others. And I think this is one of the principal reasons why we see things like cyberbullying and trolling proliferating, which can have a really negative effect on society, as well as the perpetrator of those acts, because their reputational damage that people experience. So that's one way that social media can harm us. We also know that social media makes it much easier to curate the way we present ourselves to others, which can stoke chatter in other people, because you log into Instagram and you're like, oh my God, why is everyone in my network doing so well on mm-hmm. such great vacations with, you know, perfect athleisure wear and so forth? That can create chatter in others because they're aware of their own inadequacies. So that's the dark side. Very quickly, the positive side of social media when it comes to the inner voice is it does provide us with opportunities to both obtain support from others and also provide it. And so I think that the key with social media is you really want to understand how can you navigate that digital space productively to help you rather than bring you down.
Ethan Cross, professor in the University of Michigan Psychology Department. His book is called Chatter. Let's go to T now in Sand Creek. Hi, T. Go ahead.
Yes. I have severe mental illness, and I feel that definitely affects my inner voice and exponentially increases my rumination or chatter. And so one of the tools that I use is, like you said, reframing or cognitive behavioral therapy. And just one example would be if I start catastrophizing, I will often tell myself, that's pretend. Like, I have to stop and say this string of thoughts, this sequence of things that I'm imagining in the future that's so disastrous, it hasn't happened. It's not real. It's imaginary, almost like a mom coming into a room and saying, checking under her child's bed and saying, see, there's no monsters. It's not real.
T, thank you for that. Ethan.
Yeah, this capacity to reframe is really central to our ability to manage our chatter. It's what broadening our perspective is all about. So when we get stuck, when we're experiencing chatter, we tend to zoom in really narrow on the problem. All we can think about is this worry we have or this thing we're ruminating about. We get stuck thinking about it really narrowly. Oh my God, I said this to that person. And they said this. We lose that ability when that happens to focus on the bigger picture. And when we zoom out, we can often find different ways of making sense of what we're going through that can be helpful. So zooming out, broadening our perspective, there are many different tools I talk about in my book for doing that. And I'm delighted that you've learned about those strategies in the work you're doing. So that's great.
But when does the chatter go too far? And, you know, by way of you should get help for a mental illness or, you know, when does it get really costly to your health?
Well, you know, this, like so many things when it comes to the mind, we're talking about continuum here. There's no blood test that you can take to determine when your chatter has spilled into the extreme realm. Now, chatter can be disabling and debilitating for all those domains we mentioned earlier, our ability to think and perform, relationships, health, when it strikes. The cue to tell you, hey, well, maybe I need to do more than just try to implement tools on my own, but maybe I should see a mental health provider, is when you find yourself experiencing chatter in a way that is significantly impairing your ability to live the life you want to live for at least 2 weeks. If you find that for over the course, you know, over 2 weeks' time, you're really being brought down in a way that is not allowing you to achieve to live the life you want, that's a cue that it might make sense to talk to someone about getting a more concentrated form of help.
University of Michigan psychology professor Ethan Cross giving us tools to deal with our inner voice and keep it in check. And we'll pick this up back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The brain is a prediction machine, as psychologist Ethan Cross tells us. It's constantly trying to help us navigate this world. The voice navigation in our head can lead us to good places. It can lead us to bad. It's always on the move. Ethan says we spend one third to one half of our waking life not living in the present. The book is called Chatter. He's with us for about eight more minutes. Let's go to Celeste now in Eagle River. Hi, Celeste. What's on your mind?
I'm an autistic son, and I wonder if you have any insight on autism, echolalia, and their constant talking to themselves.
Okay, so autism, a family member having autism, and any links to chatter. What do you know there, Ethan?
Well, you know, autism and I think you mentioned echolalia. Those fall outside of the scope, actually, of most of my research and what I talk about in the book. There's certainly cases in which intrusive thinking play into those phenomena. We find that this kind of chatter can actually play out across multiple kinds of psychological conditions. That's why we call it a transdiagnostic factor. But if a family member is experiencing, has autism and is experiencing some real trouble with their chatter, that's definitely something you want to talk to their healthcare provider about to see if they can give them specific tools to deal with that experience.
Celeste, thank you. You know, one of the things that you talk about in your toolbox is how you organize and clean when you are faced with a difficult thing like writing a book, like chatter. And I really felt that too. I mean, when I feel better when my kitchen is clean, when my floor is clean. What is to that organization strategy?
Yes, and this is a really interesting one for me, I've got to say, Kate, because I'm not a particularly organized person at home. My wife's always on my case for clothes, you know, a trail of clothes from the shower to my closet.
Mm-hmm.
And but when I experience chatter, everything in the house is pristine, so much so that I actually think my wife sometimes secretly wants me to experience a chronically low level of chatter. So here's what's happening. Like, here's why I organize when I have some chatter and why a lot of other people do it too. When you're experiencing chatter, when your mind is racing and you don't feel like you have control, that's not a pleasant feeling, because human beings, we want to be in control of things. We love control. And so organizing and cleaning, this is a way of compensating for the lack of control you feel in your head. You're compensating for that experience by exerting control and creating order around you. And it's a really easy thing to do that often helps. Closely related to this is why a lot of people engage in rituals when they're experiencing chatter. A ritual is a rigid sequence of behaviors that we perform the exact same way every single time. And if you watch professional sports or amateur sports, lots of teams actually engage in rituals during high stress situations. Rituals are also, they are a sets of behaviors that are under our control. So when everything, you know, like you don't know what's going to happen with the outcome of this event, you can perform a ritual that gives you more of this sense of control, which helps you feel better. So that's one type of tool that people often use.
How about nature? Going into nature, seeing nature, or being just absolutely in awe of it? What does that do?
Well, nature is a free, side effect free way of helping with chatter. It helps us in two ways. One thing nature does, it helps restore our attention, which chatter consumes. If you've ever tried reading a couple of pages in a book while you're worried about something, you read the pages, but you don't remember anything that you've read. That's because chatter is consuming your attention, not leaving anything over to focus on the task at hand. Nature helps restore that limited attention that we possess, because when you go for a walk in a safe green space, your attention gradually drifts away from the chatter and onto the beautiful surroundings. So it helps us in that regard. It also helps us by providing us with opportunities to experience the emotion of awe, which is an emotion we experience when we're in the presence of something vast and indescribable, an amazing sunset, a tree that's been there for hundreds of years. When we experience awe, we what happens is what scientists call a shrinking of the self. So you feel smaller when you're contemplating something vast and indescribable. And when you feel smaller, so does your chatter. So that's another way nature can help us.
I know you've been doing some recent research on how the COVID pandemic is affecting our inner voice and whether it has, that inner chatter has intensified, you know, with all of the worrying and the anxiety. What have you found so far?
Well, chatter's way up. I know we are living through the chatter event of the last 100 years. Because COVID has given us, this situation where we lack control and we're not certain of what's going to happen next. And those are the building blocks of chatter for many of us. So by last time I checked, chatter in the form of rumination, depression, anxiety was up about 30%. So that's not great. What we've done some research to see how people are faring with this. And what we've learned is that the more healthy tools people use to manage their chatter, the less anxiety they report experiencing on a daily basis. So people who are using the most healthy tools, 5 or 6 different things, they're experiencing about approximately 30% lower, less anxiety on a daily basis than people who are using unhealthy tools. Unhealthy tools are things like venting and substance abuse, you know, trying to distract with alcoholism and so forth, suppression, healthier tools, things like nature, reframing your experience, journaling, mindfulness. So the take home here for me is learn about the tools that are out there. A lot of, you know, complicated science went into their discovery, but the take homes are often very easy. And it's usually not about doing one thing, but rather doing several.
You mentioned journaling. And what does that entail? Because, you know, for someone who writes all day long, the thought of writing a few more pages in a journal, that just doesn't sound appealing.
Well, 2 comments to that. There are no single magic pills. I talk about 26 different tools. I list them at the end of my book. Different people find different tools attractive. And so mm-hmm. if you don't find journaling appealing, don't do it.
Move on.
Because you're not going to do it. Move on to something else. Some people love it. I don't personally journal, but lots of people benefit from it. And I should say really quickly, when I'm talking about journaling, I'm not talking about writing beautiful prose. I'm talking about writing about your deepest thoughts and feelings for 15 minutes, for 1 to 3 days, just letting it go. What ends up happening when you do that is you end up creating a narrative to make sense of your experiences in ways that can be helpful. But there are lots of other things you could do.
Ethan, thank you so much for joining us.
This was such a joy. Thank you for having me on. I hope we could do it again.
Ethan Cross, professor in the University of Michigan Psychology Department, where he directs the Emotion and Self-Control Lab. His book is called Chatter, The Voice in Our Head, Why It Matters, and How to Harness It. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.